Good morning. You are listening to Culture in Motion, your twice monthly show on KBOO with your host, Mike Crenshaw. I'm here with my co-host, Ryan Danley.
What's up?
What up? We're in a week whatever of stay at home, COVID-19 crisis worldwide. This is the Portland, Oregon version. So we're maintaining some social distance. We're in the backyard as opposed to the studio. And every now and then you're going to hear some birds singing. You might hear a dog barking. I just want to give you guys a heads up. Ryan, you're a writer, a comic, father. You were driving trucks for a while. You're unemployed. How's quarantine going for you?
It's been okay. It's been, doing the best I can. It's a new normal. Mm-hmm. Trying to, it's weird to not have, daily structure, and I mean, I think I'm so, geared towards getting stuff done and having a routine that's built into me that kind of, having that taken away. I got laid off this week, is a new challenge every day.
And, right.
I'm trying to figure that out with kids. I'm trying to figure that out with creating and trying to figure, keep my mind working, rather than just kind of sinking into this whole thing has been an interesting party. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How about you?
Same, man. Adjusting. Some of the things that I've noticed, I made a little joke about what day it is. So I keep looking at capitalism as central to the way that we think and how ingrained in my own consciousness and body, having to show up a certain amount of hours on certain days has become part of my worldview. And so now every now and then, because I'm not having to go to my day job and have that be the main priority of my daily activity, I forget what day it is.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely knew in my body when Friday or Saturday was coming, because you can feel the week creeping towards what was Wednesday hump day, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can feel the week creeping towards those, anywhere from 24 to 36 hours that you were going to get to not do if you just worked during the Monday through Friday hours, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I'm like, my routine right now is like, did I just check Facebook or did I just check Twitter? Maybe I'll just go ahead and check it again. Big shout out to everybody, the essential workers out there.
Right.
Taking it, being there and showing up. And I mean, honestly, they're probably getting tired of hearing being thanked for it, I think they enjoy the appreciation, but I mean, at the end of the day, these people are risking their lives, and a lot of these essential, quote unquote, essential jobs have really, really become evident in this whole situation.
I find myself forgetting sometimes. Some places don't let you forget. One of the grocery stores I frequent, they've got the plastic shields up. But I think I've been to one or two convenience stores that there wasn't a shield. And just in the course of day-to-day activity, sometimes I will have to get out and do some things outside of the house, and there might be a particular block or two where the traffic is just as crowded as it is on a normal day. And then I forget that we're in all this. Then I get down the block a few blocks later and there's only one or two cars or no cars, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, there's a stay-at-home order, we're in a pandemic crisis. So looking at essential work, man, we were thinking about having that be our topic, and I don't know, like what do you consider essential when you think of essential work? What are you thinking about?
Well, I think that we're kind of surprised right now, what has mm-hmm. Risen to the top as essential work. And I mean, I think that anybody who's been, supporter of the working class for any period of time has viewed lots of quote unquote menial jobs as essential work for a long time. You know, I come from grocery stores. I've worked most of my adult life in grocery stores, and I've always been a proponent of the work that we were doing there was important. You know, and you know, like really getting, like, you know, I worked in produce, so dealing with farmers and getting you know farmers are counting on us, our agricultural economy communities, and are all, you know, counting on produce people to get that stuff and keep it fresh and keep it selling and keep it moving to keep their business going. And you know, and if we're not going to do that, it isn't. Unfortunately, though, society has never really viewed any of that work as, you know, with a tremendous value.
It's, right.
I mean, the majority of people who work in grocery stores make as much as, you know, fast food workers. And no disrespect to fast food workers, but it is notoriously a low-paying gig. And, you know, so these people are getting food out here and are a structured part of our existence. But I've never been given any value through these situations. And now we're counting on these people who have given never any value to be there and make sure that we, you know, have our food and are there to fill shelves when we panic buy.
Well, you know, with the, I recently saw a meme that really resonated with me, and it said, all of a sudden, the very people that we're dependent on are the same people who, you know, a lot of people in this society didn't think should make $15 an hour as a minimum wage. And so what I'm wondering about is two things. One is what efforts are underway to organize to fight for a real fair wage, you know, not just a living wage, for people who are on the front line right now, making sure that we're all eating, making sure that we have running water to drink and to bathe in, making sure that we get to and from places that we need to get to, as far as public transit. You know, somebody said something like, well, public transit is a safety hazard. And I'm like, yeah, but for a lot of people in this country, they don't have cars. And some of those same people that don't have cars or even bicycles still have to commute because they have to work, you know. And a lot of the jobs that they're doing when they have to work are jobs that we need in order for us to be able to continue to have food, clothes, shelter, you know, education and healthcare. And so, and the other thing I'm wondering is, you know, is there an effort underway to make sure that when we come out of this crisis, that people who are doing this kind of labor are going to be getting paid more. It should be evident that people should be earning more money than they have been.
You know, I think that, you know, as somebody who's been in grocery for a real long time, it's you know, grocery unions have had a really tough time with leverage. You know, they're known in the union communities as being, you know, soft unions, and mostly it's it has to do with you know, like a large labor pool of, you know, they didn't have any leverage really to say, you know what I mean? Like Fred Meyer can threaten to, you know, they can threaten a strike against Fred Meyer, but then Fred Meyer, you know, just says, okay, well, we'll just hire more people. And at the end of the day, people are going to still grocery shop where they're going to grocery shop. They might lose some business, they might do anything, but the threat isn't there. And I think that if grocery workers are, this would be the time.
This would be
really the time to, like, say, hey, like, listen, while this country fell, we stood up and we made sure that people could panic buy toilet paper, and we made sure that people could, you know, I mean, without them, like, where would we be now? I think, you know, I think that the stress of the grocery stores as they are now has added stress to this whole thing. I mean, I think if we did have full toilet paper and full rice and pasta, and we didn't see those empty shelves every day that we went in there, that we would actually probably feel like a little bit, like there would be a little less, like, societal strife over this, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of listeners would love to add their two cents to this, but since we're not recording live, because KBOO is actually closed during the crisis in response to the health requirements and for the safety of all the volunteers and staff that would be coming into KBOO, we can't really take calls. So we're pre-recording remotely. I know that all producers on KBOO are recording remotely right now. essential nature of work, what gets deemed essential. I think there was actually an act called the Essential Labor Act, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm thinking of things like, we had a question around the weed industry, and if weed was people who labor in the commercial and legal and medical marijuana fields, if those things are considered essential. And I saw something that said that in California it is considered essential.
And they were left open here too. So considering that they're essential workers here, I mean, I'm pretty sure Washington too. So I think the entire West Coast has ended up being used the marijuana industry as essential.
Right.
So imagine you're sitting in jail. Some weed charges.
Right.
And people outside are being deemed essential workers now through it. I mean, it just...
So I still have more research to do, and I want to say, you know, this show isn't always about the answers, but it is about continuing to ask the critical questions. And I don't know the answer to this, but one of the things that we were aware of when weed became legalized is that it wasn't federally legal, so it was on a state-by-state basis. So then if a weed shop goes under right now, do they then have access to federal subsidies, or is there a safety net for people in that business that isn't legal on a federal level right now? Have you heard, like straying from some of our actual formal talking points, have you heard anything in here locally in the Portland area about people, opportunist crimes?
I haven't heard about that yet. I mean, I know that, like, I know Zoom has had some problems with some people, like, breaking in and, like, with security issues. I know that I think we'll probably see more when checks start showing up, when Trump checks start showing up. We'll probably see more people looking to exploit that. Like, you know, I think right now it's hard with crime. I know some windows got busted over, you know, by that Fred Meyer over on Interstate a few nights ago. And then, you know, so there's like a little bit more upheaval, but it's actually less than I would have thought. You know?
Yeah, I heard that I was in a gas station the other day, and it's a centrally located place on the Inner East Side, close to the industrial area, and there's a lot of houseless activity down there because there's a lot of social service agencies that serve the houseless community. And one of the guys at the gas station was telling me that they had problems with theft, and he felt it was directly related to the ban on cans, and that people weren't able to get their deposits for returning cans and bottles as they have been up to this point. And there's a large sector of the houseless community and other working people and poor people too who rely on being able to recycle cans to get cash to eat.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, I mean, my neighborhood's got 2-3 folks who cruise, and it's essentially their job. It's what they do all day. I save up cans and I run them out there, and you know what I mean? Might as well get them in their hands. And like, I think that you still can do the cans, but I think that there is like some of the way that they're functioning is differently now, something like that. It's
okay. So it's been altered or transformed. Yeah, I think you know, the lack of people on the street is noticeable. The clarity of the sky, like the clouds are clearer. I have been getting out of the house a lot, even though it's a stay-at-home order. You know, I maintain my social distance because I think that getting out and exercising and being outdoors is actually essential to my mental health, you know.
Yeah, I think it's good to actually, like, you know, I mean, like kind of we spoke about on the last episode, like what is gonna, after this going to look like, and how is our, you know, situation going to look like, and, you know, how are we going to start dealing with other people, and how are we going to start rebuilding like healthy relationships with people, and not be afraid of touching things and being around people. You know, I mean, we're in such a position now where we're like in cognitive behavior therapy basically every day to condition ourselves to like just fear everything that we're going to come out of this. And you know, going outside is a good perspective change, you know.
Yeah, you know, and at first I noticed that people tended to be more friendly, you know, in my neighborhood, in some of the city parks. I went out to the Gorge yesterday. I noticed that the state parks were all closed. I heard that Kate Brown wanted to make arrests. I don't know if it's state police or local sheriffs that are making arrests of people who get caught in state parks out in rural areas. But I heard a couple people did get arrested for trying to go up to Multnomah Falls. So the reason for the city parks being open, I'm not sure of. I noticed that the public bathrooms are closed because those are going to be a health and safety hazard. But it is good to see people out walking around, getting exercise, trying to stay healthy, enjoying the weather. I've been seeing the people do their workouts in the park because, you know, the gym is closed for all of us that might have been used to enjoy the health clubs and the gyms. One of the points you mentioned was that a lot of people that are deemed essential workers, they actually don't want to be at that job.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing it because they think it's essential. They're doing it because they have to.
Mm-hmm.
They might not be purpose driven or mission driven by that work. I don't know. You know, it's on an individual basis. But then you mentioned like first responders. Say more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, you know, I mean, I think when we get into, like, you know, like first responders and nurses and hospital folks, I mean, inessential, like, I mean, I don't think anybody wants to be in danger in their lives, but they do have put themselves in a position and they have chosen paths these are potential situations. And, you know, we're thankful, most are first responders for that, but particularly, you know, hospital workers and putting themselves on the front line to day to day is, you know, absolutely hats off. But, you know, but 7-Eleven, you know, like, you know, convenience store workers, grocery workers, most folks, you know, have ended up in these jobs. And, you know, there is a certain amount of, like, yeah, it's nice to, like, cheer for them. It's nice to, like, want them to have more money. But, like, we're asking people, like, you know, like, they don't really have an option in this. And none of these people signed up to, like, risk their lives.
Right.
To you know, to make sure that people have food, you know. And I mean, like, that's become the reality, and a lot of people are willing to take it. But at the end of the day, like a lot of these people have, you know, gone to school for 6 years, 4 to 6 years to do jobs that aren't essential, you know. And I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and they didn't, you know, and they've been thrust into this where if they want to go home, they're going to get fired. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, you know, and so then it puts us in this position, as you were talking about with, like, capitalism earlier and how it, like, guides us. It's like, you know, these folks are like, oh, I guess I can go in and make $15, $16 an hour and risk my life. Because, you know, I mean, like, you know, there was a couple at a Northeast grocery store, there was a couple people who got, you know, went home with symptoms, and some Starbucks workers have had symptoms, and you hear these things popping up, and I mean, those are hotbeds for this thing. And, you know, and, like, you know, at what point do we say, like, I mean, this is a little bit of, like, a crazy sort of, like, indentured sort of behavior, you know what I mean? Like, you are risking your life now.
Right, and when we think about essential labor, like, what perspective are we labeling it and defining it as essential from? Are we talking about, you know, a lot of this work is service work. You're going to have people who are providing services to the populace because they're interacting with us in a way that we're getting what we need from the labor that they provide. Okay, so grocery work, food work, transportation. So that said, what about the worker themselves? Like, at what point is the consideration for the essential laborer a consideration and a priority? Because if the work I provide is essential, shouldn't that mean that my health, safety, and well-being is essential?
You would hope so, you know.
You just want me to do the job, or do you actually care about it?
Right. Or are you just glad that I'm there? And right. When this is all said and done, are we just going to go back to, like, you know, yelling at people and making them go look in the back for stuff and complaining when things are too expensive, or, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, what are going to be the lessons of this in this situation? And, you know, and I think there needs to be, like, some hard conversations about, like, are people, you know, can people be fired from a job that hasn't had, I mean, nobody signed up for a grocery store job has signed a thing that says I'm willing to risk my life of a contagion to do this job, you know? And so at what point is it that it's out of the bounds of a normal job to risk your life for it, you know? Like, what
is it worth it?
Is it worth it?
Hey, that reminds me, there's all these pop songs that have choruses that can be used as a reflection on the questions that we have to have with ourselves when we go out. And I know the Missy Elliott song has been used, you know, is it worth it? Mm-hmm. Can you work it? And so on and so forth. We're thinking about leaving the house and going and taking care of business. So here's the thing. I want to ask you a more theoretical question about, and hopefully there's going to be some humor in this. We're going to improv for a little bit. I want us to think of three jobs that prior to this crisis, people who were in those fields made a ton of money, generally, mm-hmm. at least is our perception. But who also, if we think about what essential work is and work that's actually needed, those jobs might not actually be necessary at all coming back from this. I imagine that there should be a redistribution, a more egalitarian redistribution of wealth. And in that happening, maybe some funds could be taken out of certain sectors. So what do you think, if you could come up with three different jobs that you know of that exists in the world, then maybe we don't actually need those jobs in society. What would they be?
President.
Right?
I mean, like, at this point, like, why that guy's in charge of it, I don't know. I have no idea why he's put himself in charge of it. And I mean, I know that he's an easy target, but in this whole situation, but mm-hmm. like, this is why we don't have kings and we don't have, like, you know what I mean? This is why we have people who, like, hire things, and we have an overseeing government that says, hey, we look out for pandemics and we look out for anything, you know what I mean? And like,
right.
I mean, at this point, that guy's useless. Like, I mean, like, just step out of the way,
right?
You know, I mean, just let other people do stuff. I mean, he's useless to begin with, but this is I don't think there's been a clearer time of that reality. I don't know, you got one?
A completely unnecessary job. I couldn't agree with you more. I think certain positions of authority mm-hmm. don't really show up in my everyday life in a way that's helpful. So, but I'm gonna think about I don't know, this is hard for me because I don't interact with people who do work in the financial sector, you know?
I think, you know, we have a lot of, like, you know, like, if you look at, like, the World War Z book where they're talking about, like, uh-huh. who rises to the top and who doesn't. You know, it's a great book if you haven't checked it out, Max Brooks. It's a good book about kind of the condition of the world. And, you know, they talk about how when everything hits the ground, like, a lot of, like, people with executive at the end of their name or assistant or anything are now working for first generation Mexican immigrants because they know how to farm and they know how to gunsmith and they know practical skills. And so if you really want to get down to it, it's like practical skill jobs are going to be really where the rubber hits the road in that whole situation. And most of these things that we've ended up deciding, you know, because we've given, as a society, so much value to organizational jobs, people who can organize other people. And I mean, that has value, but the actual, like, dirty hands have become the not value. And, you know, and in the end, and as we're seeing right now, like, the farm workers are still out there.
Yeah.
You know, the grocery workers are still out there.
Yeah.
And you know who's staying home is the entire accounting department, the entire marketing department, the mm-hmm. entire, you know, like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. So I'm going to give an indefinite furlough to meter maids.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. There's less traffic on the street anyway. And I really don't think you're necessary. I think that there's enough capital circulating in the society for us to figure out different ways to cover the cost of whatever municipal needs we need to meet, aside from giving working people tickets, you know?
I'm just going to say it. Cops.
Cops.
Where have the cops been in this? I mean, the cops aren't even in the equation. I barely even see them around. Like, they're just, like, really, like as far as, like, you know, when it comes down to, like, you know, we always need cops and cops. Everybody loves the cops. And it's just like, you know, when it comes down to this, like, cops are useless. Cops can't defend this. You know, cops can't protect this. Like, where, I mean, like, I, like, in this.
Can the cop, like, shoot the coronavirus? Well, is that what you mean?
I'm pretty sure they're going to try.
I've been wondering. This isn't funny. I'm sure there have already been people who've been killed and violently assaulted out of the fear that they were going to get somebody sick from coughing or something, right?
And you know, exactly. And the cops, you know, were the first ones to be like, we're not touching people.
Right.
And we're not going places. And right. Unless there's a violent crime happening, we're not doing it. They were the first ones to step back. I mean, the mailman's still in my house.
Right.
The all the other services are still there.
Yeah.
You know, all the medical services are still going. And but the cops are like, we're not doing anything. And it's just like, you know, and it just shows you that their place when the rubber really hits the road.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, I mean, you know, no, I'm not complaining.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mind barely seeing them. Now in my neighborhood, I tend to see a lot. They're in their vehicles. A week or so ago, I was in my partner's neighborhood and I saw. About, shoot, like 12 or 13 cops. One of them had the beanbag gun out. They were over at the New Seasons on Southeast Division. I don't know what was going on. But I imagine they didn't want to get sick. And that's why they were overreacting, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's going to be what it is. Like, they're going to, you know, they're going to err on the side of, like, you know, now, like, quote, unquote, non-lethal force, you know, to deal with situations that, you know, that they could have before. But, you know, I mean, I would have to say that, like, I mean, in this situation, if we came back and there was half as many cops, and I've always said cops should act like firefighters, you know what I mean? When was the last time you saw firefighters patrolling looking for fire? You know what I mean? Stay home, cops.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, man, we're running out of time today, and I think I'm going to take us out with a song that really is a reflection of the streets and the way that they seem right now. And that's going to be Ghost Town by the Specials. But before I do, I want to say that this is a conversation for maybe a future show, Ryan, in that when labor becomes unnecessary, it opens the door for automation.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's hard for us to hold police accountable now for their crimes against the public, then we might be in a worse situation when the police are automated as far as accountability is concerned. And we know right now that in numerous cities around the globe, drones and robotic police are actually being put into rotation to deal with people violating curfew and quarantine and the stay-at-home orders. So,
and I've seen RoboCop a lot of times, and nothing good happens for me.
Nothing good. All right, brother. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening, y'all.
Have a good day, y'all.
Peace.
listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.